the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on.
Welcome
your
to this
dreams.
March 2018 edition of Education Now. In this edition, I welcome Greg Crewe. Am I saying that right, Greg?
Yeah, Crewe.
Greg Crewe, president of Local 4906 of the American Federation of Teachers in McDowell County, West Virginia. Welcome, Greg.
I need to correct that. I am a former president.
You're the
I stepped away about a year ago. I'm a building rep at the moment.
Okay, so, well, I'm so grateful that you agreed to be my guest on Education Now and to get us all up to speed on the exciting news from West Virginia. It is quite a success story. And now I understand other states are following the lead of West Virginia. I was led to you by Donna Yates Mace, who has been a guest more than once on Education Now.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll be sure that I let people know that you were a former president. So
okay.
Yeah, so let's talk first of all about what you believe is the role superintendents played in this strike.
The superintendents were key figures in the strike, because instead of having an opposition relationship, a traditional labor management relationship with the teachers, the superintendents supported the teachers. And that support consisted primarily of simply canceling schools on the days that teachers said we're not coming. We were fortunate. We were out on strike 9 days, and never once in any of West Virginia's 55 counties did we have to line up outside our facilities with signs and stage a picket and watch to see which teachers would go through the line. There's a word that I'm trying not to use because it's not a nice word, but who those people were and which parents would take kids through the line. We didn't have to do that, because every single day that we were out, superintendents simply canceled school. They played another role as well. The president of the Senate, his name is Mitch McConnell, the president of the West Virginia Senate, was our biggest single obstacle to success.
Yeah, and I can believe that.
He called all the superintendents together. He invited them to Charleston, kept them waiting 4 hours, and then asked them to send their teachers back to work. And the superintendents basically said, no, and here's what we want from you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he's someone I just do not admire, Mitch McConnell. Yeah.
Right.
And I think he's been, he's not been a friend to the common person ever. So, well, what are the latest aspects of this strike, and to what extent is the labor aspects? What are the labor aspects of the strike? And go ahead.
I feel like we made labor history. I don't recall the last time there was a strike that was this large and this prolonged. Municipalities and local government units sometimes face strikes like this. Pittsburgh and Chicago and maybe Philadelphia stand out in my mind. I'm not positive there was an actual strike in Philadelphia. Pittsburgh threatened a strike, and the people up there said, don't do that. Let's figure out what we can do to keep you from doing that. But this is the first big prolonged strike maybe in a few decades, And it also brings the history of labor back to a focus on West Virginia, which is part, you know, where it should be. West Virginia has a long and proud history in the labor movement in the U.S. And so that's nice for us.
Yes, it is.
I think we became an argument before the Supreme Court in the Janus case. The Janus case, you're probably aware, would end collective bargaining if the court rules in favor of Janus. For about 30 states in the U.S., I believe, what that would mean is that they would all turn into West Virginia, where if things got bad enough, their public employee unions would simply go out on strike the way that we did. Right now, if they have a contract, they have a no-strike clause. And so there are benefits to the current system that the Supreme Court may have been forced to consider and might have otherwise overlooked had we not been on strike when that case was heard before the Supreme Court.
Isn't that wonderful? That's wonderful. So this is a... Yeah, so this is a significant event in labor history. And, you know, I know that my father was quite a bit older than my mom, and he worked in the coal mines in West Virginia for a time. And he was a really a huge supporter of unions. And even when he went into business, he never stopped being a union member and going to union meetings. And so I've understood from him, from his teaching to me, the importance of unions and the importance of collective bargaining. Well, please tell our listeners how these days that you and your colleagues were out will be made up.
The governor made a statement about granting school systems flexibility. And that statement then got interpreted for the public by our state superintendent of schools, Dr. Steve Payne, who basically has said teachers got paid not for 9 days while they were on strike, and we want those days back. They're going to make those days up, period, full stop. You know, the difficulty that we have at this point, there's a few ways that we can make those days up. But from my perspective, we had a moral, an ethical, probably a professional obligation to take the steps we did for the children that we serve. People think that we were out on strike for higher wages and better benefits. And that's not quite a complete picture. I work in a school where we have 32 teaching positions, and 11 of them are vacant because we don't pay enough to attract teachers. When they graduate from Concord University, which is fairly close to us, and they look around at what other states offer, they decide they'll come home in 3 or 4 years after teaching in Ohio or Pennsylvania for a while. And of course, they never do. So we did what morally and professionally was required of us. And Dr. Payne's current position is more punitive. It's kind of a commercial transaction. You either owe me time or money. And I hope that somebody brings some sense of fairness, and I'm not sure what, you know, I hope that position gets moderated some. I believe the State Board of Education has the authority to weigh making up those days. I don't know if they will, you know, but the current position, I think, is punitive, and it looks like most people, some kids and most teachers will lose spring break in every county in the state. It looks like that we could still be in school on June 10th, June 14th, depending on exactly what happens with the weather for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Looks like so. Well, do you feel that the agreement reached was reached at the cost of other social programs for the welfare of the poor?
I don't. I'm hearing that a lot at the moment. People mention Medicaid, and, you know, my understanding on Medicaid in particular is that they're going to take extra Medicaid money and put it into this and then replace the extra Medicaid money later. What I do believe is that people like Mitch McConnell, I'm sorry, Mitch Carmichael and Craig Blair and that group of people are happy to point the finger now and say it's their fault, when the truth is that they wanted to take money out of these programs to start with. These people have no interest in social welfare programs. These people have no interest in helping the poor. Their interest is helping business.
Right.
And so now they get to do it and blame us. They were going to do it anyway, I suspect. But now they get to do it and blame us. And I think most West Virginians are smart enough to look at that after the last week and a half, 2 weeks, after the Saturday night massacre in the Senate where Mitch McConnell killed every rule he could find. I said it again, didn't I? Where
yeah.
Mitch Carmichael killed every rule he could find. After that Saturday night massacre, I think most people look at him and think, I'm not sure if he's telling the truth.
Right. They think he's a liar, and I agree. And I know the teachers were making lunches for students. And a group of people, and they were so that they wouldn't that this wouldn't affect them. This the taking away their lunch, their ability to get free lunches. So the teachers were, making lunches for them and having it delivered.
Yeah.
I don't know if you heard about that, but I heard about it on Amy Goodman. I mean, she's doing a wonderful job of covering the strike. Well, what do you think? Do you think anything's going to happen in Oklahoma?
I don't know. I know that they're in desperate need of a pay raise out there. I'm part of a group on social media that's examining the options at the moment. It wouldn't surprise me to see it happen in Oklahoma. It wouldn't surprise me to see it happen in Arizona. It wouldn't surprise me to see it happen in New Jersey. I've heard rumblings about those three states as possibly looking at going out on strike before the year's out. Teachers need to be better paid.
Chris, I heard a representative from Oklahoma speaking, and she was saying that they had set it up, I think, for the 3rd of April. And then, and so they thought, if we're going to do it the 3rd of April, then we will not strike. And then the next day they came out and they said, no, not the 3rd, the 23rd. And then the teacher said, no, that's too close to the spring break. And once, you go on spring break, then you come back and you're there just a few weeks before summer. No, that's just too late. That's too late. And so they said, well, okay, then we'll go back to the 3rd. Now, she was saying, now, let's see if they keep their word. If they keep their word about that. So there's a lot of, a lot of really yucky stuff going down. And but there's so many hopeful things. And I just cannot believe how people are mobilizing. I mean, you can't, everyone's talking about it. It's just so exciting.
In West Virginia, one of the things that happened was that it really didn't matter whether you were a union member. The tension, the mild tension, friction that existed between the unions went away. As a building rep, I got to collect up the votes in my building. And the first time we voted, we have 55 employees based at my school, and we had 85% of them voted yes to go out. Later, we voted, after the deal was reached with the governor, on whether or not to stay out until it became law. And that vote was unanimous. Mm-hmm. Every vote we got, there were a handful of people we couldn't reach.
Right.
But every vote we got was a yes, let's stay out until it's actually signed by the governor.
Right. And I think this guns and schools and arming teachers and everything that happened in Florida, that's, just adding to it. it's adding to the publicity and everybody, you know, so that you know, young people are listening and they're aware of what's going on, as well as teachers and parents and you know, older people, and everyone is involved, because there's an issue, there's some kind of issue up right now that draws attention to how all of this is connected. And so
schools are definitely a focus for more than one reason at the moment.
Yeah, which is quite exciting. Well, I wanted to ask you, I wanted to let our listeners know that that Greg is a Title I math teacher and previously a special education teacher, and that he's worked with every grade level and served students, including but not limited to students with most of the most common disabilities. He has worked in both reading instruction intervention and in math intervention. He's helped implement technology growth in his school, and he's been a part of the school's leadership team, and he has served as a mentor teacher. Greg has worked as a beat reporter for a daily paper, and he has written for the internet for the last 15 years. What are you writing on the internet, Greg?
At this point, when I write things that have to do with education policy and educational issues. Let me say that in the last year and a half, I've moved on from math. I tell people I'm a recovering math teacher. I'm now a social studies teacher.
Uh-huh.
And it's marvelous to teach in an environment where I don't have a pacing guide and don't have an end-of-the-year test. That's a little thing, but... I used to write for a company called About.com. I was their editor for Asia for Visitors on their travel channel. That's been a while. I've written on a huge variety of topics from, I had a blog at one point that talked about wine. I had investment articles on the economics in Asia. I lived in Asia for a while, and so I had all kinds of stuff. But at the moment, I focus almost exclusively on education and educational policy.
Yeah, and as an educator, you've worked with grade levels kindergarten through college, right?
That's correct. I was adjunct faculty in a program that was designed to help people complete their degree in education before I became a classroom teacher.
Yes. And I'm just so impressed with, you know, your biography. And as Greg said in the beginning, he's a former president of Local 4906 of the American Federation of Teachers in McDowell County, West Virginia. And in that capacity, he worked at Reconnecting McDowell, a community school internships run cooperatively through the AFT in McDowell County Schools. I don't really understand how that worked, but...
I didn't actually work for them. I worked with them. Bob Brown was the director at the time, and Bob is a great man. We had some good people working with Reconnecting McDowell, and it came in and it tried to bring partners into the county at a number of levels. One of the things it did was secure us high-speed internet for all of our schools. It worked with the Appalachian Regional Commission to come in one year and bring laptops to all of our middle school kids that they could take home and use as a resource. They have a program where they take high school students and give them experiences in D.C. and in other political environments, where they get to see how government works. Randy Weingarten, the national president for the American Federation of Teachers, and Gail Manchin, co-chaired, put together that effort at Reconnecting McDowell. They're actually building a teacher village in downtown Welch that we hope will provide housing for new teachers. It's an apartment building. It's the first construction, multi-story construction project in Welch in decades.
Isn't that exciting? That's exciting. Now I understand that reconstructing McDowell is a project. Yeah, and
reconnecting
McDowell is a project that you guys have been working on, and you know, and now I understand that. So I want to let our listeners know that that Greg got his education at the American National University, and I noticed that you were interested in linguistics, which I think is very interesting.
And the Australian National University. I spent 4 years in Australia, and the degree is from the Australian National University in Linguistics.
The Australia.
I lived in Canberra for 4 years.
You lived where?
Canberra, Australia. That's the capital of Australia.
Okay, all right, okay. The Australian National University. Okay.
Yes.
Wow, I just can't believe I got this information, so much information incorrect when I was researching you, Greg.
I apologize for that.
Well, now, do you have? Are you married? Do you have children?
I am married, and I am married to my boss. I am married to the building administrator, the principal of my building. And I have been working with her for about 7 years now. I had worked with her once previously for a year when I first started teaching, and it's been a marvelous 7 years. She is retiring at the end of this month, but I have some time to go because I'm a career changer, so I'll probably continue working until they can't stand me or I can't stand them. To get my 30 years in, I think I have to work till I'm 75, and I don't foresee doing that.
Right. Well, but you don't have children.
I have two grown children. My children are 30 and 32. I said I was a career changer. I've got 14 years I'm about to complete in the classroom, and I'm 57 years old.
Right. Well, you know, I have four sons, and the oldest were twins, and they're in their late 40s, and all of them are in their 40s now. So I know that how that is, but it's wonderful. So are there any websites or links you want to recommend to our listeners?
If you're in West Virginia, the West Virginia page of the Badass Teachers Association, mm-hmm. we refer to that sometimes as BATS, as an acronym.
Yes.
The West Virginia BATS is a page that I moderate. I've been involved with the BATS for a couple of years now. And their basic emphasis is on avoiding commercialized school reform. They began as opposition to the Common Core State Standards. But the underlying idea is that it's not the teacher's fault, especially the problems that arise from poverty and from a lack of resources in the school system eventually turn around under a lot of the school reform models and get blamed on the teacher. If the teacher was just better, we wouldn't have these problems. Mm-hmm. And our goal is to beat down that lie and try and put the truth out there, which is that we don't give public education the resources it needs to succeed.
Yes, I so much agree with you. And I love the Badass Teachers Association Facebook page. And, I mean, what a wonderful, it's been wonderful to have that page. I also like the Teachers Resistance page, and that's a good one. And then Wear Red for Public Education. That's Donna. Yeah, Donna's page. I really, all of those pages I find really great on Facebook. Now, do you want to give us a listener's contact information, or should they just respond to...
They can find me on Facebook and Twitter.
On Facebook and Twitter. Okay, I don't do Twitter. So you can find Greg on Facebook and Twitter. Well, I want to say that the websites that I recommend are the National Center for Montessori in the Public Sector and the National Center for Montessori in the Public Sector Facebook page. Now, you can listen and download free anytime at this website. And please join us on the Education Now Facebook page to leave comments and join the conversation. Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. And Education Now is a proud supporter of the American Montessori Society website, which is 3wsamshq.org. Well, I believe so much in public education. When we moved to California, my husband was a professor of philosophy and linguistics, and we moved to California to do graduate work because we knew we wanted to have children, and at that time, going to university was free in California. It was all free.
Right.
And so we were just, you know, this is where we wanted to be. So we moved, and then, of course, it all came tumbling down with Reagan and Proposition 13, and I just could not, I chose to have these children, you know, they weren't, you know, it wasn't an accident, I chose to have them, and I just could not sacrifice them. And I knew the teachers were trying, but they didn't, you know, with so many kids in a classroom, they had to, you know, sit in rows and give them these materials. I mean, it was just too much. And so we took the kids out of school. We moved up north here to Mendocino County, and we started our own school, a private school. And I'd had some Montessori training, and so that's what we did. And the older boys were almost 10, and then I had a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. And then, you know, I was just going to homeschool. And Michael was teaching, you know, at the university. And then my doctor said, can't my son come to school with you? He's going on a bus to Ukiah every day. And I said, well, I guess so. And so that's how it started. And then pretty soon, you know, people, it just grew. And so we never had more than 36 students. It was always about 2 to 24. And it was K through 12. And we did, it just blossomed, and it became so popular, and as well as, you know, public school teachers would come, and I would mentor them, and I was sort of grandmothered in. But all of the time, it was like public education that my heart went out to. And so when I retired in 2000, I made it my goal to work for to empower parents and students in public education so that they could take charge, you know. And so I'm just so excited about what's happening, Greg, because I feel like it's happening now. I mean, it's happening. For a while there, you know, some of the unions like Chicago and up in Washington, they were coming along. And then there's a few things were happening in L.A. And then, of course, you had these really model schools in really affluent areas, you know, like my granddaughters were in Palo Alto. Well, they got a great education. But in Palo Alto, they said, we're not doing Prop 13. We're going to continue sending our taxes to public education. But, you know, they had right. the money to do that. So, you know, there were these pockets of affluent schools that were models. And I kept saying, you know, why don't you guys go look at the model schools and see how they're doing it? You know, like we do, we public education can work. It has always worked, and it will work if we would just do it like we promised we would do it. And so I believe that's happening now, and I believe it's going to happen because for people and for poor people, and for especially for people of color, who you know, a lot of them just they've just gotten used up the cahoozie, and so I just feel like this is. What's happening is just a great up for everybody. And so I want to, is there anything you want to leave our listeners with after my diatribe?
One of the things that kind of struck me as this ended was that on the last day that I was up there on the eighth day of the rally of the strike. And they had a number of events on that day that focused on prayer. And, you know, perhaps it's just coincidence in some people's mind. Personally, I don't think so. But you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, basically they got 7,000 or 8,000 people outside to form a human chain around the Capitol and stand there and pray. Personally, I wonder if the strike would have been shorter if somebody had thought of that on day three. but that was one of the most interesting and inspiring moments in the whole thing to me. I especially appreciated the fact that we had 9 days of civil disobedience, and the closest thing that I saw to violence, to vandalism, to any sort of bad behavior was that in the hallway of the Capitol, there are signs that say, please be quiet in the hallway, that somebody printed off on their own little computer printer. And on one of those, I saw where somebody had scribbled snide remarks. That was the closest thing I saw to any kind of vandalism or bad behavior. And we pulled off statewide 9 days of civil disobedience without a single act of violence or property damage or whatever. And West Virginia is very proud of that.
Oh, yes, I'm so proud of them. I'm just so proud of them. I can't, I've had all these, you know, some bummers happen to me personally, and it just doesn't bring me down because I just keep thinking about those West Virginia teachers and what they managed to accomplish, and it just lifts me up. Well, I want to thank you again, Greg, for being my guest and on Education Now, and thank you to your wife for sharing you with me tonight, and thank you for all the work that you're doing and that you continue to do for public education and for the children in our communities. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Who are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.